The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Remind the member from Antigonish that the decisions the Premier and the NDP government have made since taking office have made life less affordable for Nova Scotians as they continue to face high prices for everyday essentials, gasoline and power, with no relief in sight under this government, Mr. Speaker. I ask for waiver of notice and passage without debate.
There has been a request for waiver. I hear several no's. The motion is tabled. Orders of the day, oral questions put by members to ministers. The time now is 12:57. We will end at 1:57. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, more recently all Nova Scotians have heard the Harper Conservative government back away from their funding to the CAP program, which is accessed by as many communities across this province and used by many Nova Scotians. My question to the Premier is, what steps has the NDP government taken to convince the federal government of this wrong-headed decision?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I'm sure the member opposite knows, these are important, particularly in rural communities, but throughout Nova Scotia, the CAP sites have provided, of course, public access. We have made it clear that we intend to stand by our commitment to those sites. We're still working through what this is going to mean potentially to service around the province.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, in the Premier's answer, he talked about how important these are to communities across this province, and not only in my constituency, but in all constituencies across this province or organizations in Nova Scotia who support the CAP program, that they're available, are now sitting there with uncertainty about what the future is for this program. So would the Premier tell this House what the NDP government has done to reach out to those Nova Scotians who are on the front lines delivering this service to our communities?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Actually, the Department of Community, Culture and Heritage, of course, has in place a program currently that provides an envelope of funding that can be accessed by libraries so that if they're looking to have their internet connections paid for, they could access that money through the department. Now, not all of them are CAP sites. Many of them are, and we make that funding available.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As the Premier alluded to in his answer, there are many variations of CAP sites across this province. Some are in libraries, all of which, though, play an important role in our communities. It's a place where Nova Scotians cannot afford to have access to internet service at home, to go there to look for jobs, Mr. Speaker. They also provide, quite frankly, training for Nova Scotians who are looking for support in and around technology. So as all members of this House and Nova Scotians try to convince the federal government of this wrong-headed decision by removing funding away from the CAP program, is the government of Nova Scotia looking at being able to, in the short term, meet that shortfall of funding that has been caused by the Conservative government pulling away from this program?
The Honourable Leader, the Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, as I indicated, we are still doing some evaluation of what the potential costs are, but I will table for the member opposite the letter that was written on behalf of the government by Minister Paris with respect to the financial support for the Community Access Program 2012-2013. I won't read it all. I will simply say that the last paragraph reads, "I cannot stress enough how important this program is to our communities and businesses, especially in rural areas and for those with limited means. We welcome the opportunity to continue our partnership with the federal government to ensure the future successes of CAP." Mr. Speaker, there may be other things that are of interest to the Leader of the Opposition in the letter. Thank you.
Order, order, please. It's improper to refer to another member by their name in any way during any proceedings in the House. This includes notices of motions or while reading from documents such as newspaper stories. Thank you. I will now recognize the Honourable Member for Victoria the Rakes. Mike.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Community Services. Mr. Speaker, when it comes to recent news stories about Talbot House in French Vale, Cape Breton, I can only shake my head in disbelief and wonder what's going on in the Department of Community Services. Mr. Speaker, when serious allegations were made about a staff member at a daycare, the minister didn't even see fit to pick up the phone and call the board. When an allegation was made, a false one, about the executive director of Talbot House, the minister's department refused to give details about the accusations to the board so that they could investigate. In both cases, Mr. Speaker, department staff hoarded information in their Halifax ivory tower, information that would have allowed both boards to do the right thing to protect the vulnerable Nova Scotians in their care or put concerns to rest. So, Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the minister. Will the minister immediately order institutional changes in her department that will allow it to more fairly and effectively perform its job to do the right thing for the people it's legislated to protect?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, once again, the member opposite has the facts mixed up and wrong, and we have explained it many times over. The situation with respect to the daycare, as we said, we did our due diligence. We took immediate action. We had the authority to investigate an issue that is a current issue and pass the information along to the appropriate authorities that investigate historical allegations. With respect to Talbot House, it was once again a current allegation. So we did go forward with in our authority that we have and met with the board and gave them the appropriate information that they needed.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I can't believe that answer. Really and truly, I can't believe it. Mr. Speaker, the Board of Directors at Talbot House has said that the report that was produced by the Minister's Department was prejudicial, riddled with errors, and fundamentally flawed in process and analysis. The Minister then released the report which detailed unfounded allegations against a well-respected priest, yet she kept the Board of Directors in the dark about this for months. So my question through you, Mr. Speaker, is why did the minister publish discredited slurs and unfounded allegations about Father Paul Abbas on the department's website yesterday? What happened to the presumption of innocence, an ideal that only a couple of weeks ago this minister touted as one of the foundations of our democracy?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, once again, they do not understand the facts. The fact is, they were not there, Mr. Speaker. The fact is that our staff and community services sat down with the board and explained that we would be doing an organizational review, and it came upon immediately receiving information from a complainant. We also offered the board of directors at Talbot House an opportunity to sit down and firsthand hear the concerns of this gentleman, and they declined. So we offered the board every support and information that was available possible, and they decided they did not want to hear it.
The Honourable Member for Victoria de Lakes on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, it's very sad that the department publishes a report yesterday with unfounded allegations against a priest, Father Paul Abbas, that worked at Talbot House. It makes you wonder, Mr. Speaker, what's going on in that department? They're working in a silo. Much of what the department has said about Talbot House is disputed by the board of that facility. The reputations of several people, many of them who are well-respected volunteer board members, have been called into question by the department. So, Mr. Speaker, my final question to the Minister, will the Minister immediately undertake a thorough, independent review of the actions of her own department around Talbot House, get the facts right, and set the record straight?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, once again, I will be very clear with the facts, which they don't want to appreciate or understand. Number one, the review was an organizational review. The review was an organizational review. It did not indicate any individual's name in that. It was about whether they were meeting the standards. Now, for example, one of the standards would be to have your annual general meeting. The board of directors didn't meet for 13 years. They did not have in terms of having an annual general meeting, they did not in 13 years. That's just one. People are invited to read the review. And no, we're not going any. We were responsible. We did our due diligence, and we focused on the organizational review, and that's all we focused on.
The Honourable Member for Richmond.
Mr. Speaker, last Tuesday I asked the Minister of Education to explain using taxpayers' money to buy orange lunch bags for pre-primary students. The Minister was appalled by me calling them lunch bags, saying that calling them orange lunch bags was a derogatory term, although her own department refers to them as lunch bags in their own tender documents. Mr. Speaker, the Department of Education has already spent $124,000 on orange lunch bags. Now, Mr. Speaker, we know that this government is prepared to spend $527,000 over 3 years on these lunch bags. Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Education couldn't answer my question about how many education assistants or teacher assistants could be paid for with $124,000. So my question to the Minister today is how many education assistants or teacher assistants could be paid for $527,000?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much. The literacy packages that we send out with our early learners are part of our succeeding in reading, so that we're supporting literacy with our youngest students when they come to school. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, tender number 6014375, closing on the 27th of this month, calls for an additional 17,600 lunch bags, except at this time, the tender specified that the bags cannot be orange in color. Mr. Speaker, QP, NSGU, SEIU have called on the government to reverse the cuts because of the impact felt in the classroom. Students are walking out of their schools because of the impact this minister's cuts will have in the classroom and education. 16,000 Nova Scotians have signed an NSTU petition because they are concerned about the impact the cuts will have in the classroom. Meanwhile, the Minister of Education is looking to buy an additional 17,600 lunch bags full of trinkets. And my question is, how can the Minister justify these cuts to education while spending $527,000 of taxpayers' money on orange lunch bags?
Honourable the Minister of Education.
Thank you very much. This minister in this government is investing in our children's literacy, which I see the member opposite does not agree. But this is making sure that we are providing in the hands of families appropriate literacy supports before children come to school. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, if someone can explain to me how a glue stick and how a hacky sack is helping with literacy for our children, I'd certainly love to hear the argument. Mr. Speaker, what we're saying over here is $527,000 could have saved three schools and the Strait Regional School Board. $527,000. If the minister's concerned about literacy, that $527,000 could have paid for teacher assistance and education assistance to help our children with literacy. Mr. Speaker, that money could have gone for helping to keep librarians and our libraries open in schools throughout the province. Yet, Mr. Speaker, at a time of cuts, this government felt it was useful to use taxpayers' money, $500,000, to buy orange lunch bags for our students. So my question to the minister, will she immediately cancel the purchase of 17,600 extra lunch bags that will cost taxpayers hundreds of thousands of dollars and invest the money where it belongs, in the classroom?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We are working on making sure that our children have the supports necessary to make sure they're successful with literacy and numeracy. We are investing in our children younger. That is where we are putting our investment, and it's unfortunate that the members opposite do not see how important it is to invest in our young children. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on a new question.
Mr. Speaker, last week on April 10th, when asked about the orange lunch bags bought by the NDP government, the Minister of Education stood in the House and told members that her department worked with school boards to develop these very orange lunch bags. Mr. Speaker, school boards themselves are telling us that they were not consulted about the bags and that some felt it was a fait accompli, only being asked to submit enrollment numbers to order the bags. Mr. Speaker, I asked the minister last week to table information showing how school boards had been involved in the development of these orange lunch bags, which she has failed to do. So my question to her is, Mr. Speaker, school boards who are responsible for delivering programs and services to students in Nova Scotia did not ask for these orange lunch bags. Exactly who did?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. School boards were consulted, and they work with their literacy specialist. The reason that not all students in the province and not all boards are going to be using the literacy packages because they already have their own that they're sending out. This is an initiative that many boards have already started, and we're just making sure that all students, our youngest students, have supports offered to them when they enter school. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, every day the story changes. Now, all of a sudden, school boards were not part of the development of these orange lunch bags. Mr. Speaker, 75 education assistants were cut from the public education system last year. 82 teaching positions were cut to reach budget targets, and boards are now looking at having to cut library services. Schools across the province are being slated for closure. Three have already happened in my own board. Parents of students with special needs are worried about the supports their children will lose because of this government's $65 million in cuts to education over the past 2 years. Still, the Minister of Education spends $124,000 on orange lunch bags and $90,000 in promoting her education plan. Sir Speaker, that would pay for a lot of education assistance to help our students with literacy and with all other needs they have in the classroom. Sir Speaker, my question to the Minister of Education is, did she personally approve the spending of $527,000 of taxpayers' money to purchase orange lunch bags?
Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Working with the department and looking at the strategy around supporting our students with succeeding in reading, and I definitely did support signing the request to make sure that we are making sure that we have what we need in the hands of our youngest students. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, apparently she also signed a request to cut $65 million out of classrooms in Nova Scotia. It'll have a detrimental effect on all of our students. $65 million out of the classroom, $500,000 for lunch bags. Mr. Speaker, how much more Nova Scotians need to see how out of touch this government truly is? Mr. Speaker, students are starting to stage walkouts to protest library cuts. Parents with children with special needs are continually expressing concern as to what will happen to their children in the upcoming school year, and yet the minister tries to justify spending over $500,000 on lunch bags. Only this time, the new bags won't be the colour orange. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is, when will she stand up for the students in Nova Scotia, reverse the funding cuts, and cancel the order for more orange lunch bags?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We are making sure we're investing appropriately in our students, and the per student funding has gone up. We are making sure that our children are getting the supports and resources that they need. The Department of Education has many different departments that look at making sure students have what they need, and we have a plan, and we're going to follow it.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Community Services. I am looking for clarification. On the one hand, in the case of the East Preston Daycare, the Minister knew of serious allegations being made against an employee there. She failed to inform the Board of Directors. She kept that information to herself from them, hiding behind some kind of protocol in her department. But on the other hand, in the case of Talbot House, there are serious allegations of which she is being made aware, false allegations as it turns out, against an employee there, and she's only too quick to inform the Board of Directors and then later spray that allegation on the government website. Mr. Speaker, just outside this house, before question period today, when asked about Talbot House, the Minister of Community Services says it is our duty to go to the Board of Directors in these situations. So my question to the Minister, why did she fail in that exact same duty to the children of the East Preston Daycare, yet rush to judgment on Talbot House?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to inform the member opposite that I'm a mother and a very proud mother of a young gentleman, and every day I count my blessings that I have a child. And I think children are a gift to this world, and we work in the Department of Community Services each and every day for the well-being and safety of children. And in this circumstances, nothing is different from that. We took immediate action. We took the appropriate action. And they just do not want to accept the correct facts.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the correct facts are that in the case of the East Preston Daycare, the minister knew of a serious allegation against an employee there and didn't tell the daycare board, didn't tell the daycare. They allowed those children to continue to be at risk. Her excuse is that it is a past allegation, as if that will make any difference to the parents of those children. In the case of Talbot House, when she is informed of allegations against an employee there, she tells the board instantly, but then doesn't tell them exactly what the allegation is. And when they report back that there is no wrongdoing, she sprays that information all over the public internet. Mr. Speaker, this minister does not know what her duty is or who it's for. So I will ask her, why did the children of the East Preston Daycare not warrant the same protection as the clients of Talbot House?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, I'll repeat the facts again. The facts are that we did what was under our authority to do, a protocol that has been established since 1996 in legislation, that we have the ability to look into current allegations, which we did with the daycare center, and nothing came forth. We also, because of the historical allegations, and it's a responsibility of the RCMP, we pass that along to the RCMP because that's their capacity they have and their mandate. With respect to Talbot House, it was a current allegation. We went to the board. We gave the board the opportunity to first
order. Order, please. Order, please. I've just done a little bit of research in the last little while and realized that the word cover-up is unparliamentary, and I'd remind the honourable member not to keep using that word in the chamber at this present time. Forward. It was ruled out parliamentary in 1958 and again in 1986. And that's three times I've heard it during QP here today, so I'd ask the honourable member not to say it again today. Thank you. The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
I was concluding. With respect to Talbot House, what we did was an organizational review to ensure that the board were meeting the standards in the service agreement. We did, however, also offer up to them the claimant that pen to paper with respect to the issues that he had, that they could speak firsthand to that gentleman, and for it's the board's decision, for whatever reason, they declined the offer to hear that information firsthand.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, in the case of the East Preston daycare, the minister didn't even give the board a chance to decide what to do to protect those kids because she didn't tell them the allegations that she was aware of. In the case of Talbot House, she put it into the hands of the board and then complained when they acted. The fact of the matter is she's hiding behind some protocol that she keeps quoting, but the only protocol that minister is interested in is the protocol that protects her own political position. My question to the minister, if you don't tell the board in the case of East Preston Daycare, but you rush to judgment and tell the board in the case of Talbot House, which is wrong and which board deserves an apology from that minister?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, I can't help if they can't understand the facts and weigh things. The protocol that we're referencing is a protocol that they followed within the legislation on current allegations. Once again, I will stress the fact that with respect to the daycare, we did investigate if there was any current allegations and if there was any substantial evidence for that. There was not. Therefore, the RCMP, who do historical investigations, were given that job to do. I'm sorry that they questioned the RCMP's ability to do their work. As I said before, with Talbot House, it was a current allegation. We did an organizational review, gave them the opportunity to hear more information from the complainant, and they decided not to do that. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Daily in this House, we're seeing a pattern where the Minister of Education is unable to answer questions about the cost of public education. These are the basic costs required to deliver programs and services to our students. Nova Scotians are expecting, Mr. Speaker, that the Minister would understand the costs to deliver education. So my question to the Minister is, what is the average cost to educate a student in the public school system in our province?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you. Did we do a budget estimate?
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We are making sure that the resources that our schools need has been provided to them. We have increased spending over the last number of years, and this year we've increased per student spending. Our ratios continue to be low, and our class sizes are the best that they have been in a generation. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her first supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and obviously the Minister doesn't either understand or have the answer. Funding per pupil is important, but, Mr. Speaker, it does not drive the budget process. What should drive the budget process is the cost per student to deliver the program. The outcome of the budget process should be the funding. So my question to the Minister is this. How does the funding per pupil that's provided to the boards compare to the cost per pupil of delivering the program?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
A good comparison.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We are making sure that our budget matches the resources that are needed to deliver a public education program in the province of Nova Scotia. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Most people would understand that before you determine the funding, you have to know the cost. So It appears, Mr. Speaker, that the Minister does not. So my question to the Minister is this. If the funding is adequate, which she says it is, adequate to cover the costs, then why have boards been faced to have severe cuts?
For example, last year, 82 teaching positions, 75 education assistant positions. If the funding is adequate, Mr. Speaker, why the cuts?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Unfortunately, we are in a situation of declining enrollment. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Premier. Last week in this House, the Minister of Education, during question period, said, and I quote, "Through the hog formula, there is a line for support for the libraries. They have $3.8 million in this line in Chignecto Regional School Board for libraries." Well, that turned out to be wrong, Mr. Speaker. The Premier said, and I quote, "They are funded for those positions, and if they don't use the money for that, then maybe they just don't want the funding." That also turned out to be wrong, Mr. Speaker. The fact of the matter is there is no specific line item that boards are funded for libraries out of global funding like they are for many other things. My question to the Premier, will he now admit that he was the one playing political games with the Chignecto Central Regional School Board and take this opportunity to correct the answers that they gave in the House last week?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, thank you for the opportunity to respond to this question. It's always nice to get one in question period. What I would advise the Leader of the Conservative Party is that the information that we gave him last week was full and correct.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, if that was true, we'd remember it because it would have been the first time in the history of this government's question periods if they did give a full and correct answer. Mr. Speaker, while the department gives boards no targeted specific funding for libraries, there are, in fact, targeted funding for other things like special education and assistance to children with special needs. The department, in fact, has earmarked $22.6 million to the Chignecto Central Regional School Board for that purpose. But the fact of the matter is it is inadequate to meet the special needs of that school board, and the board, as a result, spends more than that and has allocated out of their general funding a total of $27.4 million, or an additional $4.8 million, to meet that need, to cover the actual needs of children with special needs in the Chignecto Central area. My question to the Premier, now that he's sent someone up to look for other savings, will he guarantee the parents of students in the Chignecto Central Regional School Board that whatever cuts he comes up with, they will not target the additional special needs funding?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the special needs funding that has been targeted to those boards, we've already said, have been protracted. That will continue to be the case.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, what I was asking the Premier is that he won't claw back the extra $4.8 million that that board identifies as needed to meet the actual needs of special needs kids with that school board. That answer certainly is not going to be much comfort to the parents of Chignecto Central Regional School Board. But if we take the Premier at his word that he wants to protect the librarians and he wants to protect special needs funding, where is he going to go? What is he not willing to protect to see that he meets his budget target for Central Regional School Board?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, as the member opposite would know, the Chignecto Board's enrollment has declined by some 8%. Their actual per-student funding has increased by some 12%. It is, of course, unfortunate. We would much rather be in a position where we're actually seeing the number of students going into our schools increasing. Unfortunately, that's not the case. As he knows, the province, and I would say the majority of this took place on the former government's watch, but we've lost more than 30,000 students out of our public school system. The result of which is that the demand for educational services have been declining, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The government has stated, Mr. Speaker, that there are three pillars around which they set their priorities. Unfortunately for the students in this province, education is not one of those pillars. In the speech from the throne, Mr. Speaker, less than two pages spoke to education, but even more disappointing, Mr. Speaker, was there was no mention, absolutely none, no mention made of special education. So my question to the minister is this: what message is this obvious omission sending to the parents of students in our public schools whose children do have learning challenges?
Honourable the Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I would have to reread the throne speech, but I'm quite sure that the autism strategy was mentioned in it, if my memory serves me correctly. But I just would like to point out that every child in this province deserves a very good, solid education. And every child means every child. And children that have special needs are children. They are part of our Kids and Learning First plan. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Parents of special needs students who are entering our public school system are telling us that they are terrified. They're watching how this government is ignoring the needs of their children. What they need from this minister is a commitment to adequately support programs and services for students with special needs. The allocation that boards are getting for special education is not enough. Will the minister stand up for students with special needs and adequately fund the programs and services that they require? That would be adequately funded.
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And recognizing the increased costs that boards informed us they were spending, we made sure that within our funding formula that we have increased the restricted funding going to every school board in this province.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What the minister is saying is that boards have identified the needs, and what they're also saying is the funding they're getting will not meet those needs. Mr. Speaker, we know that 1 in 10 have some form of learning disability. The number of students with autism has increased to 1 in 110. This is the reality of today's classroom. It has nothing to do with declining enrollment. Boards recognize this. They share the information with the department, yet the funds they receive are not enough to meet those students' needs. So will the minister acknowledge that boards are having to use additional funds in order to make up the gap that her government has created in special education funding?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We are making sure that we are adequately providing resources to each and every one of the school boards. We have increased our per student funding. We have a situation where we have lost 30,000 students out of our system out of the last 10 years, and we will continue to lose students. And at the same time, this government is investing in our children more than ever any other government. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. While Nova Scotia schools and hospitals are being forced to gut frontline services, students and patients can rely on to deal with the NDP's misplaced priorities. The government has taken to the airwaves with more election-style advertising campaigns. And, you know, really, I wonder who exactly signs off on all of these wasteful spending, the advertising that's going on. So I'm gonna guess it's the Minister of Finance. The same MLA for Halifax Fairview that many times when he sat in opposition spoke against government spending on advertising. Mr. Speaker, my question to you is for the Minister of Finance. In the light of his brazen hypocrisy, when will the Minister of Finance admit his mistake and take the appropriate steps to ensure that the NDP or New Democratic Party reimburses the taxpayers for their shameful political advertising?
Order, order, please, order. On parliamentary language again today, hypocrisy is unparliamentary, and I ask the Honourable Member to retract that. Thank you very much. I will now recognize the Honourable Member, the Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I find myself in the same position I was in the last budget session. Although it's flattering that members of the House think that I control every line of every budget, it's actually not part of the budget of the Department of Finance. And I would like to suggest that the member address his next question to the Chair of the Treasury Board.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on his first supplementary.
Well, there you go, Mr. Speaker. You know, we'll probably get the little runaround of who exactly actually signs off on these things. Minister of Finance should actually be ashamed of that answer. On one hand, he's preaching fiscal restraint, and then he passes on the decision to spend money to someone else. All the while, students and patients in Nova Scotia suffer because of the clumsy efforts on frontline services. So when will the Minister of Finance stop putting the political interests of the NDP ahead of the real interests of Nova Scotian students and patients?
There you go. When?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
I see the member obviously didn't take my advice. I'd refer that to the Chair of the Treasury Board.
The Honourable Deputy Premier. The Honourable Minister of Public Service Commission.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, as usual, they got it all wrong. Mr. Speaker, it's plain to see, Mr. Speaker, that if one day they're in this House, like, going on and on verbatim about what we need to tell the people what programs are there for them, and when we do it, they complain against. Mr. Speaker, they're full of ifs and buts, Mr. Speaker. We all know if ifs and buts were candy and nuts, every day be Christmas. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, parts of the government's new radio ads would be laughable if the situation at our schools and hospitals weren't so serious. In particular, I'm thinking about a line where a woman tells the audience, paying a little less tax, that's better for me. And then a man enthusiastically jumps in and says, me too. I don't think any of the Nova Scotians who have shelled out over $1,000 in higher HST think that they're paying any less tax, Mr. Speaker. Seeing how the minister can be taking $4,000 more in a higher HST from the average Nova Scotia family this year, how many families did it take to pay for the NDP political advertising to the Minister of Finance?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. When we came into office, we inherited a structural deficit that was going to lead us to a $1.4 billion deficit, $17 billion of debt, Mr. Speaker. This province has had enough of liberal and conservative finance, Mr. Speaker. We have restored sense to the province's finances, Mr. Speaker, rather than consuming the services now.
The Honourable Minister of Finance has the floor. The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We are the ones who restored sense to the province's finances. Rather than burdening future generations like the Liberal Party and the Conservative Party did. And, Mr. Speaker, here's a simple fact. Here's a simple fact, Mr. Speaker. We have spent 40% less on communications than that party did when they were in office.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. According to the Learning Disabilities Association of Nova Scotia, 1 in 10 people have some form of a learning disability. According to Autism Nova Scotia, the diagnosis for autism spectrum disorder grew at an exponential rate in the past 20 years, jumping from 1 in 1,000 students in the 90s to 1 in 110 today. My question for the Minister of Education is, how many students in the public education system currently have identified special needs?
Good question. The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the member opposite for that question. We have now, through our Kids and Learning First plan, we're making sure that every school in this province is connected through the in-school, and we are now going to be able to collect the data appropriately over the next number of years to be able to, one, identify, and two, to make sure that students are receiving the programs and services that they need, as opposed to getting the information from school boards after the fact. So we have a plan to make sure everything is connected through in-school. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, that's an important question. The Minister couldn't answer it in estimates. She can't answer it now. That's proof that she doesn't know what the real costs of educating our young people are in the province of Nova Scotia. Yet the Minister continuously attacks previous governments for increasing investment to our classrooms, and in particular, investment that was increased to support the diverse needs that we have in today's classrooms. So, Mr. Speaker, since the minister is so critical of increase funding for students with special needs? Can the minister tell us specifically what services and supports have and will continue to be cut for students with identified special needs, with her cuts coming continually to the classrooms?
Honorable the Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We will continue to support our students, and especially our students with special needs. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the fact is parents and teachers and professionals are telling us that students with special needs are losing supports under this government. 75 educational assistants were cut from the system last year alone, Mr. Speaker. And now parents are concerned that their children will have to share education assistance between students. Mr. Speaker, children that have autism don't have it half the time. Children with special needs don't have their needs half the time. They can't have the supports in place half of the time, Mr. Speaker. Is the minister keeping track of those special needs students who are losing services because of her government's gutting of our education system?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I just would like to remind the member opposite that supports for students are based on identified need through an individual program plan. Part of that plan, the parent, the teacher, the administrator, all agencies associated with that student, to make sure that the appropriate resources are provided to the student. In every case is different. In some cases, a student will receive full-time support. In other cases, it will be divided up appropriately to make sure our students are given the opportunity to become independent. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Richmond.
Mr. Speaker, we're learning the details of a violent assault and death which took place in Halifax last evening. Speaker, on behalf of the official opposition, we certainly want to extend our sympathy to the victims' families. We are learning that the accused, who is now in police custody, was on an unescorted leave from the East Coast Forensic Facility, but never returned. I'm wondering if the Minister of Justice could provide this House with any further details surrounding this very unfortunate incident.
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you for the question. I too, and our government, extends our condolences to the family. Any loss or violence in the society is traumatic and has its price. It pays on society. On the particular case before that the member brings to attention, I don't want to elaborate on that. We'll wait and see what the actual facts are. The police are conducting their investigation. I trust their investigation will reveal the details and allow us to make decisions and to determine what actually did happen and what the facts are. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, as I've raised so many times in this House before with the Minister as Justice Critic, as Nova Scotians are looking for assurances from this government regarding their safety. And we're once again hearing of such a violent assault and a death take place is clearly unacceptable, especially knowing this individual was previously in custody. We are told, Mr. Speaker, that the accused had a history of violence and was in fact awaiting a review hearing. Yet somehow was allowed to leave the facility unescorted on a pass. My question to the Minister of Justice is, could he advise the House who makes such decisions to allow someone who is in custody to go on an unescorted pass when they have such a history of violence?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the question. The assurances to the Nova Scotians, I want to assure all Nova Scotians that this minister, that this government and the Department of Justice takes all matters of violence seriously, and that we have a well-managed, well-functioning police service in this province to conduct those services. As to whether the individual at hand, I'm not going to elaborate on that case. We got to determine the facts. The Honourable Member has made some assumptions, and I think it's inappropriate for this House to speak any further in regards to the facts of that particular case. If he wants to reframe his question about unescorted or escorted matters from the facility, I will be glad to answer any questions regarding that, but not in particular to a hypothetical situation until somebody's charged and allegations that are put forth are established, as when I'll comment on those matters.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his final supplementary.
Well, Speaker, there's two options. One can be proactive and try to prevent such events from happening, or one can be reactive and wait and wait and wait. Mr. Speaker, if the minister disputes some of the details which I've provided, then by all means, Nova Scotians are the ones who are looking for answers here, more importantly, looking for assurances. Such a violent assault and a violent death is clearly unacceptable. When it's random, it's even worse. But when we find out that the accused was apparently under the custody of the Minister of Justice and his department and was allowed to go out on an unescorted pass, that is clear and acceptable. And whether it's the Department of Justice or the Department of Health, it was under the custody of this government. Nova Scotians deserve to know that their safety is always top priority and that individuals with violent histories are not being allowed out unescorted unless absolutely necessary. My question to the minister. Media reports are that the individual did not return to the facility as he was supposed to. Will the minister advise whether any sort of advisory went out to the police or to the media to advise that an individual was out unescorted beyond their allotted time?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, there's a number of points that are made in there, and what seems to be a common thread is a number of digs and allegations and fears and assumptions that are created that aren't true. And that seems to be a common thread with the opposition, that they don't have the facts and they want to create fear in society. This government has put forth, and it was made available to the opposition, a crime prevention strategy that starts to address this. In fact, a member from, I think it's Dartmouth East, made comment about the good work in this House that he made mention yesterday in regards to the Chief of Police on the crime prevention. And I want to just compliment, when you talk about being proactive, that this government is working in a collaborative manner with all stakeholders, including the various police departments. Rather than being reactive, what we have here is a situation that the member is making, once again, some assumptions. There was, when the individual left the institution yesterday, within 15 minutes of being made aware, police were already in action, doing the patrols and conducting their investigation. And I compliment the police on that good work. On the issue of violence in society, violence occurs, and this government takes it seriously and will look and examine it each and every incident.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, my question through you will be to the Minister of Natural Resources. Mr. Speaker, I don't think I have to say to anybody in this House that we live in the most beautiful province in this country with lots of great natural resources. One of those resources is our forestry industry, which creates $1 billion industry here. And yet, this government still hasn't come up with their whole tree harvesting for the province. Their regulations are late. Now, we see the NDP can't even meet the targets that it has set in its own resources strategy, which was also 8 months late. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister of Natural Resources is, when will the minister stop his attack on this vital industry and release the whole tree harvesting regulations?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I agree with the Honourable Member. Yes, we do have a beautiful province, and so I guess we all recognize that. And the forest industry is a very important part of our rural infrastructure throughout the province. Our natural resources strategy, The Path We Share, came out last August, and we are working hard on our definition on whole tree harvesting. We've been consulting with a number of stakeholders in the industry, and you'll expect to see it, the definition, this spring.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on his first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, the one thing that I can say about this minister is he is consistent. He hasn't got one strategy on time yet since he took that office. Mr. Speaker, in an all Nova Scotia story, and I will table it, the new director of forestry says a map may earmark some parts of the province where nutrient levels are so weak, nothing can be harvested. This is causing confusion and concern for the industry that's been in a disarray, I might say, Mr. Speaker, since this NDP government took office. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is, will the minister tell industry groups today where are these regions and the nutrient levels are deemed to be so weak that nothing can be harvested there?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And yes, we are working on an ecosystem management plan for the province that looks at soils, and under that ecosystem management plan, of course, water load in an area or wind direction or amount, a number of species that are on the land. Those are all important factors in determining the type of woodlot management that can be carried out. You asked about whole tree harvesting. Absolutely, we are committed not to allow whole tree harvesting in Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on his final supplementary.
Well, it's good to hear, Mr. Speaker, that they're committed to whole tree harvesting not taking place in this province. The only thing is, how long do we have to wait? Industry, people in industry are going out of business because of the inaction of this minister and this government. Mr. Speaker, the NDP has also planned to clarify the use of forest biomass. Well, it's interesting how the Minister of Agriculture has answers now, but when he was Minister of Natural Resources, he didn't know what to say. Now, Mr. Speaker, when I have the floor, I'll ask my question. Thank you. Mr. Speaker, the NDP had also planned to clarify the use of forest biomass for generating electricity by mid-February. And I know it's a surprise to a lot of you here, but that's late too. This NDP government is pushing anything that's controversial as far as possible away without making any commitments before the next election. The turmoil is causing serious distress. You're darn right it's a speech, because you guys won't listen to anything else. This turmoil is causing serious distress on our very vital industry. Now, Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is this. When will the minister provide clarity around the use of forest biomass for generating electricity, or is he too afraid to set another deadline that he can't meet?
Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll try not to be as long-winded as the questioner, but in reality, we are working very hard, consulting with industry, working with woodlot owners, really working with all Nova Scotians. There's been on-the-ground consultation, there's been classroom consultation, and we're getting the input from those most directly impacted by industry. And again, as I mentioned, this spring we'll have in the Code of Forest Practices rules around clear-cutting, whole tree harvesting, and biomass.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Energy. Speaking of late studies, you know, the NDP talks another one. You know, Mr. Speaker, the NDP likes to talk about being leaders, but yesterday we learned yet another study's been delayed. But this time to wait while other jurisdictions make a decision on what Nova Scotia should do. The fracking study. Now, Mr. Speaker, at this time last year, the NDP said they would absolutely have the fracking study done by this spring. And they knew that the EPA, Quebec, and others were doing studies that would take much longer to complete. And they knew that because the Liberal caucus tabled those documents to show the minister at the time. But he said it doesn't matter. The study in Nova Scotia will still be done by the spring of 2011. So, Mr. Speaker, would the Minister of the Environment explain why, other than the pending election, the NDP have pushed the deadline for hydraulic fracturing review to 2014?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I want to go back and check answered, but I will. But I think that the Minister of Officers is confused. I'll answer the question. You relate to another minister, but I'll answer the question. Definitely, this is something that's very serious. The hydraulic fracking is something that we want to take very seriously. And we listen to Nova Scotians. We extended this particular review. We want to listen to other jurisdictions. And I give the opposition, the member, an opportunity to clarify who he wants to address the question.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, the Minister of the Environment, I mean, either one of them have put both their They both put their names on the press release, so either one of them could have answered. I appreciate the Minister of Environment. He is right that I said Minister of Energy first because it was the Minister of Energy that made that commitment last year in this House. Mr. Speaker, last year, the Minister of Energy admitted during question period that fracking had occurred in Hants County, as was reported by Triangle Petroleum in their annual report to the SEC. They also admitted that fracking was continuing to occur periodically for coal bed methane in Pictou County. But he tried to suggest that maybe that's something different than fracking for natural gas. It has also been reported that sites near Truro are disposing of fracking waste fluids for New Brunswick operations. So, Mr. Speaker, does the minister intend to permit fracking in Nova Scotia for things other than natural gas? And does he intend to allow fracking waste from other provinces to continue to be disposed of in Nova Scotia while the review continues? The Minister of Energy.
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
This is for me, is it? Okay, okay. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to be clear on that. This government has never approved hydraulic fracturing anywhere in Nova Scotia. The only hydraulic fracturing that's been approved in the past was in 08-09 under a previous government in Hants County. And no other hydraulic fracturing is occurring at this time, has not occurred since this government came to power. And we are taking the concerns of residents of Nova Scotia very seriously. With the last thing we want to see is harm to our environment or to our drinking water. And under the period of this review, there will be no hydraulic fracturing.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, Mr. Speaker, the Liberal caucus told the NDP last year that a moratorium on fracking permits was needed during the review period. The NDP said it wasn't. Now they say it does. Obviously, we're pleased they've come around to the Liberal position on this issue. But they've already wasted a year on this issue. And it's interesting that this morning the minister sent out a note to his party members at 9:46 this morning that says that, quote, the NDP is in no hurry to make the wrong decisions. Well, Mr. Speaker, I don't think the NDP is in any hurry to make any decision on this issue, frankly. You know, even the Alberta Oil Review, in their recent edition, has expressed concern over issues over fracking. Other jurisdictions have demanded that chemicals in well drilling and fracking be publicly identified. Mr. Speaker, will the minister agree to an immediate order requiring all onshore drilling companies to disclose all chemicals in any operations for onshore drilling?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. During the period of this review, we're using the expertise of our best geologists and hydrogeologists, environmental engineers, policy analysts, hydrogeologists, and so on. They're qualified people, but we're also looking at best practices in other jurisdictions, looking to the EPA in the United States, looking to Environment Canada studies, jurisdictions like Quebec and New Brunswick and New York State and others.
Order, please. The time allotted for oral questions put by members to ministers has expired. I will now recognize the Honourable Government Host Leader for Government Business.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Speaker, Mr. Speaker, I wish you now leave the chair and the House resolves itself and the whole House on supply.
Motion carried. I will now recognize the Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today, as we move into budget deliberations, I thought I would take a few minutes today to talk about Talbot House and the issues surrounding what has been going on at Talbot House. It's key to remember when we discuss this particular issue that addiction services are at a premium in this province. Lineups are long, and we need those services. Families need those services. And it's key to remember that fact